The Dublin Public House is a three-part series that looks at the social importance of the pub within Dublin's changing urban environment. Funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, this series was produced by John Casey with researcher Oliver Reid. Episode 3.
Originally, this episode was going to adhere to the same structure of the other two in this series, but given the pub in question, I decided that it deserved our undivided attention. The Capstan Bar, or Fallon's as it's known, is much loved by locals and patrons from all over the city. Located on the junction that stands as the gateway to the Liberties and the Coombe in Dublin, Fallon's offers excellent Guinness in an unchanged, authentic environment. Anyone who has passed through its doors will remember the head barman Dave Lee. Tall and aloof, but with a welcoming presence at the same time, Dave is synonymous with Fallon's and one of the main reasons why it has such a good name.
I think the importance of Fallon's as it is now, it hasn't been messed with, hasn't been changed. When you walk in the door, you know you're walking into a proper Irish pub, but it's a proper Irish pub that you should find in the country, but here it is, slap bang in the middle of the city.
It's hard to imagine Dave in any other profession, as he's so well suited to what he does. But what did he do for a living before he found himself behind the bar?
Originally, I first started working here about 30 years ago. It's not my original trade. My original trade, I was a dental technician.
Okay.
So I did that work, and then I was doing part-time bar work as well. So I decided to just switch to one. I preferred the bar work because in the dental, I was working solely on my own, so there's nobody else around me. And I just got fed up with that, and bar life is more social. But there's an attraction to it. It's like a drug. There's a buzz to it, and you get hooked on that. And I still am.
You said that you started working here and then you left to work in other bars in the city centre and then you came back here. There was obviously an element or something about the place that attracted you to come back and to stay. What was that specifically?
I worked all over the city, north side and south side. And I did well in all the bars that I worked in. Had a great reputation all over the city. But coming back here, it was at the time the owner, who was a relation of mine, became ill. And I stepped back in, working two of my days off from another bar, from another job, just to keep the place going, and sort of that was it. And then it was like a trap. I didn't want to stay here. I was just covering until he was well enough to come back to work. And then obviously he wasn't able to come back to work on a full-time capacity, working nights and things like that. So I ended up staying, and here I am ever since.
It always happens.
Yep.
Before we go any further, it seems pertinent to give you a bit of the history surrounding Fallon's. There has been a bar on the site since the 17th century, with 1619 noted as the approximate date of establishment. By the turn of the 18th century, it found itself struggling to stay open, with the Liberties becoming synonymous with poverty and struggle at that time. Dan Donnelly, the first Irish heavyweight champion, ran the pub for a brief period after his boxing career ended, and Fallon's is the only one of the four establishments that he ran in the city that is still in existence. After a fire gutted the pub in 1910, the building was repaired, and shortly thereafter, it played its part in the Rising, hosting female volunteers who met there to plan and strategise. Fallon's has a timeless feel to it. It's all wood with a lot of old artefacts dotted on the walls. If I walked in here 50 years ago, I'd expect to see much the same interior. Outside its doors, though, there has been much change.
They've developed all the apartments around here in a detrimental way, I think. And if you were to go around there, go through those apartments now, I think you would find that there's very, very few owner-occupiers. When they developed all this, I think their plan was for people to live in the city. It's gone completely the other way. Those are just all rented out. I think I know maybe 10 people in a block of over 200 apartments who actually live in and own their property there. Everything else is rented out. So as a social sort of example of how to develop a city and develop a community in the city, it's a complete failure.
So what do you think when you look at those apartments across the road?
It's a money-making scheme for people. Because, I mean, I remember you could come down the Coombe and you could see straight across the spire of the cathedral. And it was a lovely sight to see. But now you have to go back 500 yards to get even a glimpse of the spire of the cathedral.
Apartments aside, the widening of roads was a big part of changing street networks in Dublin City. As the series editor of the Making of Dublin City series and associate professor in the UC School of Geography, Joe Brady is well placed to explain this.
The idea of the street widening was to create a landscape which was going to be facilitatory for cars. So the idea was that we could still manage the car and we'd be able to bring increasing numbers of cars into the city centre and we'd be able to deal with them appropriately. It's a concept which lasted through the late 1960s into the middle 1970s before it was finally realised that you couldn't do it. But that didn't stop the road widening plans which had been developed in the early 1960s being carried out right into the 1990s.
It took so long for them to decide on the which way they're going to widen the road, the new road, Luke's Avenue around the corner here. At one stage they thought they'd put it through at the back of the pub, and then they eventually came through and brought it in where it is there now, just off coming off the Coombe and up onto Cork Street. But at one stage they were going to bring it from the corner of Kevin Street through the back of the pub, or at the back of the pub, and join up where it is now on Luke's Avenue. But they obviously went for the plan they have now, and luckily I think that was part of why there was a preservation order put on it.
Does the pub still retain some importance in the community?
It is part of a Dublin community, more so than a local community. There's people come from all over the city to come into this bar. People who know of this pub and hear of it, and they come and they get what it is straight away. They get the feel, they get the vibe to it. It has got through so many recessions over the years and beaten them all and kept going and kept its name and kept its character. Where a lot of pubs, they closed down in the city and all over the country, but this is one that's seemingly recession-proof because people were coming here all the way through the recession. We didn't have a lean period through the recession because it is a unique place. It's a place that people want to come to.
Going outside for a cigarette when you're on a night out seems natural at this stage, but when the smoking ban was introduced in March 2004, a lot of publicans saw it as a threat to their business.
Yeah, the 29th of March, I remember well, because it was the eve of my 40th birthday, and I couldn't have a smoke in a pub.
So, obviously, at the time it was quite controversial. I was the same. I remember being in the pub on the Sunday night before it was brought in, so I could, you know, enjoy my last night in the pub where smoking was permitted. But was it something that you were in favour at the time, or dead set against? And whatever your opinion was at the time, has it changed in the 14 years that have passed since?
It was a good thing to bring it in. It was rushed in. I think it changed each day nearly until it eventually became law. And Irish people just accepted it. That's fine. We'll get on with life anyway. And Irish, you change any law, and Irish people, just the nature of the beast, will accept it. We mightn't like it, we mightn't always conform to it, and if we don't like it, we'll find a way around it.
So, after maybe a month or 6 months of working in a smoke-free environment, did you notice a drastic improvement or otherwise?
The air was cleaner, yeah, but there's one thing that other customers pointed out to me at the time, was you could certainly notice people's flatulence.
I was going to say that. Wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Where's the ban on that?
Yeah, yeah.
From one progression that has enhanced the experience of the Dublin pub to one that has perhaps dampened the atmosphere and reduced conversation, the smartphone. It offers a multitude of distractions, replacing the newspaper in many ways.
There's been a few times I've noticed that a couple would come in and they'd sit down and the two of them would straight away be on the phone. And I've quite often gone over to them and just told them it's much cheaper to talk than to text. And it is a subconscious thing with people that they're doing this. They don't realise they're doing it themselves. And, you know, they're spending their time, their social time together, they're spending it looking at a mobile phone rather than having a chat among themselves and getting to know each other better, or getting to talk to each other about the events of the day and things like that. That's going to die away at some stage. You know, they still keep on picking up their phones and looking at it, but not as much as I used to see.
Really?
Yeah, I have noticed that it is not as prevalent as it used to be already.
That's interesting. Again, you're spending a lot more time at people.
Because I'm facing the public that I have in the bar. I'm facing them every night of the week. Well, I remember years ago, before mobile phones, I mean, if you wanted to meet up with your friends, maybe you rang them during the week, you were going to meet them such and such a day and the weekend and at a certain time in a certain bar. And that was it. But you remembered everybody's phone number.
Why doesn't Fallon's feel the need to advertise? Is it a conscious decision?
It's not a decision to not advertise. I mean, basically, for my part, as far as I see it, I don't think there is a need to. It is its own beast. I mean, the boss, the owner of the pub now, he regularly posts on the Facebook page. So, I mean, that sort of thing is there, but sort of slightly embraced, but it's not a big aspect to what the pub is. There's a couple of different things that we might, over the next few years, change about the place. But I don't think there's an awful lot you can do with a place like this. You know, you must head back to what it originally is. You know, you can go with all the different things that are fads at the moment, or maybe they're not fads, maybe they're here to last. But Fallon's is a different thing altogether. It works, so why change something that works?
As someone who has worked in city centre and suburban pubs, what are the differences Dave identifies between the two?
In the suburban pubs, you sort of know who's coming in basically from moment to moment, and you know whose routine is what, that they'll be in at a certain time and a certain day, and they'll just carry on as they normally do. But that's their routine. They'll be in every Friday night at 9 o'clock and things like that, or the odd Sunday, they might come in for a few pints before they have their Sunday dinner, the old style, the way people used to do. People have habits, and you see that all the time in suburban pubs, where in the city, you're just constantly on the go. There's a constant flow of people in and out, and it's totally different. You don't, to the same extent, you don't have as many people in on a certain day. Even in here, I do have certain people that I know I'm going to see on a certain day, but not as often as you would see it in suburban pubs.
The first time I visited Fallon's wasn't the first time I had a drink there. After a particularly lengthy celebration to mark the 2008 New Year, a large number of us were wandering down Cork Street into town. A friend and I noticed Fallon's and we ducked in to check it out. Upon finding a nice quiet pub, we promptly ordered 2 pints and called out the group of stragglers behind to join us. Seeing a dozen people in various states of disrepair shuffle in the door, the barman made it clear that we weren't welcome, and he was clearly right to do so. Suitably chastened, we quickly exited the building. It was another 4 years before I'd returned for my first pint in Fallon's and realised that it was Dave who'd been keeping his house in order that day.
It's a skill that I learned over the years. You do learn over time to see something happening before it happens and to get a sense of everything. Because, I mean, you have to be, and especially in a small pub like this, you have to be aware of everything going on around you. I mean, you have to have an eye in every single corner. And, I mean, basically, when I'm working behind the bar, I'm facing the public, and I could be standing talking to somebody at the bar, but I'm still, my peripheral vision, I'm watching the front door to see who's coming towards the pub, and am I going to serve them? So, I mean, by the time the person opens the door, to the time they make them get as far as the bar, I've already made my decision whether I'm going to serve them or not, usually. Sometimes I can get that wrong. But, I mean, that's just the nature of the beast, that, you know, you have to be, you know, when you're working in the city centre and you're standing on your own behind a bar, it is tough to do, very tough, and you have to develop those skills of keeping the peace in the pub, basically, or keeping the atmosphere right, basically. But that is something that developed over the years. It doesn't come easy.
Seen you in the bar before, and you're very professional in terms of dealing with customers who you're not going to serve another drink to. Is that difficult, or is it still a professional decision and that's the end of it?
It's very much a professional decision. I've often refused people, and some people take it wrongly. They think I've barred them, but no, I've told them, no, you have enough for the moment. But some people just, they take it wrongly because they have too many drinks in them. And I get people who come into the bar and they have too many drinks, and they could be regulars, and I will say to them, no, listen, you have enough for the moment, go away. I've had a long day, give me a break, because I'm not listening to you tonight. I'm not putting up with you. You know, and that can be, you know, it can be so many different ways, and so many people might do it. But go back to where you got that drink, that amount of drink on you before. Let them be responsible for you. I'm not going to have you come in here, and if I serve you one drink, I'm now responsible for the fact that you are drunk in the premises.
People, myself included, associate this place with Dave, the inscrutable Dave Lee, a perfect head barman. Is he aware of the fact that Fallon's is so closely associated with him specifically?
It was sort of referenced to a few times, and I thought nothing of it, but now I'm hearing it an awful lot more from people, that it is about me, which I actually do not like, but I appreciate the fact that, you know, that they recognise me as the person who keeps it going. And I don't mean that in a way that, you know, I'm big-headed about it. They appreciate what I do. And to me, that's all I, you know, I don't even ask for that, but it's very nice that people recognise that fact.
His enthusiasm and attention to detail are admirable after so many years behind the bar. This is his summation of the barman's place.
When you're behind the bar, you're on stage. The brightest lights you have in a bar are always along the bar. And you have dimmer lights outside the bar, because people are attracted to bright lights. And as a barman, you've got to be aware of that. You're on stage the whole time because people are attracted to the bright lights. They're looking at the bright lights. And that's a natural thing. That's the psychology of a bar. People's attention is drawn towards that. So you're on stage. You've got to be the entertainer for the people that night. So you need to say hello to them, go over, drop their drinks over to them, help them in any way. That's part of what you do behind the bar. And it's a lost art in an awful lot of bars in this city. But that is how you make a bar work, is to be out there, to be the person. You don't have to be a big character. You don't have to be flamboyant in any way whatsoever. You're there to entertain people, to make sure they have a good night. And that's all you have to do. And it's such a simple thing to do, but it's lost on an awful lot of people.
As the last orders are served, you'll often see Dave put on a pint and open his newspaper. He has a clear and easy rapport with the bar regulars, but I wanted to know if he feels that there is a certain line between bar staff and customer that neither should cross.
And it's wrong, possibly, in some ways, but it's right for me, personally, and the fact that I must have my own private life away from the bar, that I'm not completely here, wrapped up in the bar. I need to be away from it as well. I have some friends in the bar, but I keep my social life sort of separate from my professional life. I often have come in on a night off and had a drink with customers. Yeah, I still have that line. I do have a line there, yeah.
When working behind a bar, you're going to see some customers at their worst, and some will certainly suffer from alcoholism. Can you pretend it's not there and treat every customer the same every time they come in, regardless of signs to the contrary?
In most places, yeah, you do leave it and, you know, you'd say nothing. But if somebody does step over the line the next night they're in, you know, you will tell them, stay to you, the other night there. That's a natural thing, because, I mean, what they've done on a night, and maybe they've said something wrong to another customer, definitely you want to address that fact. And, yeah, you have to approach them about the fact. So, I mean, you're always watching what people are doing, and you have to be professional about it, you know. Okay, you see them drunk, no problem, but there's a line that people should not step over. Everybody else in the bar is there to enjoy their night. It's not about that one person enjoying themselves and getting drunk. It's about everybody being able to chill out and relax and enjoy their night without somebody else interfering in their enjoyment. If somebody is loud or obnoxious and drunk in a pub, I will quieten them down. And I think rightly so.
With some 30 years of experience in the bar trade behind him, I was curious to know what major fluctuations Dave had noticed in how the public go about the business of drinking.
Some people say that the craft beers are a fad. There's a gap for them there. I mean, they're popular in all different countries in the world. Irish people are sort of embracing that fact now. But I do think that eventually Irish people will go back to their mainstay, which is the pint of Guinness. Because, you know, people move away from the city where you have a big prevalence of craft beer bars. And they get married, they have kids, they move into a residential area. But these pubs, they're not geared towards just one aspect of Irish society. They're geared for every aspect. So they serve the pints of Guinness, they have some craft beers, but they're not rotated the whole time the way you would have in the main craft beer bars in the city. So I think there's an overabundance of them at the moment, but they will die away, and people will go back to the pints of Guinness.
With all the satisfaction Dave gets from the job, I wanted to know what the worst aspect of working in the trade is.
there's a lot of background work we do, you know, cleaning up after people at the end of the night, things like that. Yeah, that's a lot of it is dirty work, basically. You have to do it as part of the nature of what your job is. You know, that's it's just natural that you there are bits of this job that you're not going to like. It just it comes with the territory. Just get over it and just carry on with it.
I was curious to know whether Fallon's has a high turnover of staff. Have past barmen been somewhat resistant to Dave's methods?
Yeah, I think there could be a lot of that. But I mean, somewhere along the way, somebody will come in here and do things, and I will see what they're doing and say, yeah, that works. And I will embrace anything. You know, somebody coming along and doing it a different way, I'll embrace that and make my job easier. Yeah, perfect. At the moment, the way things are, there's a way to work a bar like this. And you must respect the fact that, you know, it works. People come in here and they see and they say to me, oh, I'd love to work here. It's not as easy as people think. You know, to look at it from the outside of the bar, it looks easy, it looks great. But it took a hell of a lot of work for me to get it to what it is now. I've done it in most bars I've worked in. I've been very successful, as I said earlier on, in most bars I've worked in. I got them all busier. I brought it from strength to strength to strength. Is it about me? No, it's not about me.
From our interview, it became clear that Dave sees himself as a custodian as much as an employee. Fallon's has a unique appeal that he's determined to maintain. I'll let him have the last word.
Fallon's is a different thing altogether. It keeps turning over the whole time. It will never owe anything to anybody who owns it. This building has stood through so much, and it never got into difficulties over the years, but it's retained itself. But it owes nothing to anybody who ever owned it.